This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome into the Yachts and Audibles podcast. Matt Prey, Merrick Scopel, Jared Mack on this Friday edition. We're portaling. None of us are leaving the show, to my knowledge. None of us are leaving the site. But we are going into the portal because it's a podcast focused entirely on the NCAA transfer portal. What's to come for the Oregon Ducks? December 5th is the date to know. That's when players can officially enter the portal. A 45-day window will open. And some guys have already made their intentions known that they're going to enter officially on Monday. Some players have actually been offered by Oregon that are in the portal, because if you're an FCS player or if you're a graduate transfer or if you are someone that saw on the YouTube, if you watch the show, Jared Mack has declared his intentions to enter the transfer portal.
Unfortunately,
Miami, here I come.
I figured out I could add banners to the bottom of the screen, and it's really just a problem for everybody else. I'll stop.
But FCS players, graduate transfers, and players who have coaches, head coaches, leave their programs have access immediately to the portal. So that's why some guys have been able to be added in and have been able to be contacted. Oregon's made two offers. We'll break that down. We'll break some position groups that they need to look at, and then we'll get you going towards portal season, which starts Monday. And we're going to do another podcast, I think, Monday night, kind of going over all the big transgressions here. But let's start with the ones that we know. There's been a couple of guys that have entered the portal, or I guess made their intentions known they're going to. It started off during the season with Seven McGee. That should be noted. And now in the last couple of days, we've seen some, I think, big names within the fan base, not necessarily big names on the field, enter the portal. That's running back Byron Cardwell. That's wide receiver Dante Thornton. That's quarterback Jay Butterfield. And that's edge defender Braden Swenson. I think you can argue that all four of those guys are – five of those guys have had moments, whether it was individually a couple plays in a game, maybe it was a couple of weeks, or maybe it was a spring game that they looked really good, but they've also had moments where they've been on the other end of that stick, where they've not looked good at times. And it's clear the playing time was not in their favor or what they wanted it to be moving forward.
Yeah, I think the way I'd put it is these are all, as Matt said, pretty high profile names in terms of, like, Byron Cardwell is a player the fans were really excited about after last season. And Jay Butterfield had a great spring game, won over a lot of people there. Braden Swenson, I think people maybe liked the upside more than the production, but he did have a big sack against Ohio State. And obviously Dante Thornton had numerous long pass catches, but the totality of all of those players' careers were not immense, and certainly, and I don't want to diminish it, but I don't think any of these players, with the exception of probably Thornton, had much of a plan in Oregon's future. Like, I don't look at Butterfield as a player who I'm not sure ever really would have seen the field in any serious capacity, maybe as a reserve. I liked the talent. I think he's a capable player. I bet he'll do well. I think all these guys have a chance to do well at their next stops. But Cardwell was clearly running fourth, fifth in the running back, you know, room before, an injury. I don't even know how we really want to qualify that. We've kind of heard a bunch of different things about what actually went down with Byron. I don't know if it's really our place to share it, but he wasn't in the rotation this season. I don't think you expect he would have been next season. I think Thornton had a chance to come back and potentially win a role. I think that was in the cards. And I don't know what you expect with Swinson. That was a guy who I thought really highly.
I thought he was going to be really good this season.
Yeah, and he played, I looked it up, but 120 snaps. He played less snaps than Justin Flo, who by the end of the year was barely playing. So none of those guys by the end of the season, with the exception of Thornton, were really contributors. And outside of Thornton, like, to me, Thornton's the one loss that I would say, like, the upside was there with that, with another significant, you know, off season of making some strides and improving his game. He could have come back and been your number two receiver or your number three receiver next year and been a consistent contributor. The rest of the guys, I think, I don't want to make it sound like we're just totally dismissing him, because I think they were all quality pieces. I don't know how much you really expected from any of those other players going forward. So this is the way the portal works. There'll be another batch, and probably a much larger batch, that enter the portal officially on Monday. And we'll, again, be doing a podcast in that evening, kind of reacting to some of the most up-to-date information we have. But I think so far you go, well, it's the way this works. I know it's hard for fans who really get attached to players, but that's just the way things are right now with the portal, where you're going to expect a lot of your roster to turn over every offseason. And for Oregon, it's already begun. And to me, outside of Thornton, I think all the losses are just kind of, I'm not trying to be too dismissive, but pretty ho-hum in terms of the long-term and even short-term kind of impact.
I think Cardwell could be a bigger loss, but he just had nowhere to go in terms of in the rotation at Oregon, as long as Bucky and Noah were sticking around. And George James was a true freshman. I still think Cardwell's really talented, and obviously he was injured at some point this season and didn't see the field after the Eastern Washington game. There just wasn't a path for him. I still think that he can be a good player, just like I think Dante Thornton could be a good player. But like, to Eric's point, these are all names that have sentimental values with the fan base and with social media and the recruiting platform. Four of the five dudes were four-star recruits coming out of high school, bigger names, except for Swinson, who is, you know, turned into a bigger name at Oregon just because, you know, he had some good moments, and he's a great personality, and I think he's a wonderful person to talk to, or at least interview. But sometimes these guys just don't pan out. And I mean, Thornton, outside of the last three games or the last couple of games of this season, where he only is really getting this playing time because Chase Kota is injured, you're probably not going to see as much potential in him as you would now. If Kota stays healthy, you know, he's going to be somebody who comes off the Thornton's going to be somebody who comes off the bench like he did at the beginning of the season and catch maybe one or two passes a game. I still like his potential. I still think he's a tremendous athlete at his size with his speed. I still think he's going to be good somewhere in college football. But like, to Eric's point, these guys were potential contributors to a football team, but you know, Byron Cardwell only gets in because of all the injuries last season to CJ Verdell and then to Sean Dollars, who was out for the entire year. Outside of that, and this year, he just gets lost in the running back rotation and then gets injured and then never comes back. You know, there's not a lot of contributors that are going into the portal, but it's going to seem like there are because of those spring games and because of those, you know, one game out of 12 performances that these guys have. I mean, come Monday, there's just going to be a ton of players. And we've been talking about this since Josh Pate was on the podcast, where he mentioned that this is going to be a very hectic transfer portal season. And you've already seen some of that with some of the names who have gone into the portal from other schools, like Trayshon Holden from Alabama or something like that. It's going to get even crazier come Monday. I think it's actually going to be kind of exciting. It's going to be somewhat like an NBA free agency to see like what names enter the portal, but there are going to be names that Oregon fans, I mean, I'm not projecting anything, but there's probably going to be names that Oregon fans are like, wow, I can't believe he's entering the portal. I think you just have to look at what this defensive or offensive staff did with that player this past season and then say, oh, well, if they don't see it, if the prior staff didn't see them being a contributing member of this offense or defense, maybe there's a reason why they're not a contributing member of this offense or defense. And I'm not trying to dismiss these guys as players and as potential impact guys down the road, but if it didn't work here, it may work somewhere else. And that's the whole point of the transfer portal, is to give these guys the opportunity and the freedom and the ability to go to another school and see if it works there. And it just didn't work here at Oregon.
I think Cardwell's going to put up numbers, and people are going to, there's going to be people that will say, oh, well, he could have been doing this at Oregon. He should be doing this at Oregon. But the reality is he went healthy during the month of August, during fall camp. He got beat out. Mm-hmm. Buggy Irving is a better running back than Byron Cardwell. Noah Whittington is a better running back than Byron Cardwell for what Oregon is doing. And the rotation showed that Jordan James found a role and Sean Dollars found a role, and Byron Cardwell was at the bottom or near the bottom of that depth chart. But there was a clear divide between the top two of Bucky and Noah. And when you've got four or five running backs and you have a player like Byron Cardwell who's talented and will go on and do big things somewhere, I think, you have to leave. You have no choice because you're going to sit. You're all the same year. And that's, you know, that's kind of when you talk about, hey, let the, you know, the cream rise to the top when you're here in athletics. That's what they did. They found four or five guys, all the same kind of range of age and eligibility. And they let the best players emerge. And it just happened that Byron Cardwell wasn't that guy. I do think if you're an Oregon fan, don't freak out about the number of guys that transfer. Like Jared said, there's going to be guys that are players that will leave, but we're expecting, we as in 24/7 sports, like 1500 people in college football on Monday to enter the portal. That averages out to like 15 or 12 guys per team.
Yeah.
Some of them is going to be a little bit lower than that. We might see a team have like four guys, and we might see a team go like 25 transfers into the portal. It's going to be everybody. It's not going to be an issue that's strictly just Oregon. And we should also note, you see this at programs regardless of portal windows opening or not. Head coach gets hired from outside the program, guys transfer immediately. Then there's another bunch of guys that come in and say, hey, the past coach, he didn't play me. He didn't know what I could do. This guy, he's going to see my opportunity, or it's, I'm going to stick around a year, new coach, new system. I'm going to prove to him that I should play. And the same season happens again, and they get upset again. This guy's not seeing it. I'm not getting the playing time. I gave him a chance. I'm now bouncing. We're going to hit that second wave for Dan Lanning December 5th. There's going to be guys that stuck it out a year thinking that they would earn more playing time because of a new head coach. It didn't happen, and now they're going to leave. So we're in that stage now where there's going to be another wave of transfers after giving Dan Lanning a chance. And that's no fault to Dan Lanning. It happens everywhere at every school.
And I saw this posted on a message board, and I thought, I just think it's smart, and I probably would have come to the same conclusion. But just, I think before people have knee-jerk reactions to the portal being bad for Oregon, you need to see what the returns are, right? Like, Oregon's going to lose, as we said, most schools are going to lose about a dozen players, maybe a little more than that. Let's not say, oh, man, Oregon got crushed by the portal, until we see what the other side of that is, who they bring in. Because I think we're also expecting Oregon to be very active in going after players, as Matt said. And we're going to get to some names in a moment here, a couple guys that have already been offered from the FCS level. There's going to be obviously a lot more from the FBS level. Monday isn't the end for the transfer portal, is basically my point. There's then going to be the window stays open 45 days where people can continue to take off. But then there's also going to be like basically a recruiting frenzy after all of these portal guys, and Oregon is going to land. I'm not sure if it's going to be equal to what they lose, but pretty close. And I anticipate they'll hit some big players. And so maybe that's a good point of transition, Matt, to kind of the positions I think are worth looking at. I did a story up on Duck Territory on Thursday of eight positions that I think must be or should be addressed in the portal for Oregon. I realized as I was finishing it that I think the number could have been every position group, basically, by the way. Like, I was kind of going through it, and it's like there's needs all over the place. Genuinely, the only position group right now that I don't know if they need to address is like running back, but I could even be convinced, like, hey, if they go find a really like a guy who's different and brings a different skill set, they could. I don't have a problem with them adding somebody. So I'll just run through kind of the positions that I guess it's all of them basically, but like I think they could. I'll do this quick. Quarterback, we don't know exactly what's going on with Knicks with Ty Thompson. Butterfield's already in. I think, hey, not a bad idea to at least go exploring and try to find a veteran guy. It's a possibility that both Bo and Ty come back and they add Dante Moore and you now have three quarterbacks. If that's the case, there's no reason to go add a portal guy, in my opinion. But if one of the Bo, Ty, Dante don't end up at Oregon next year, I think it's worth taking a look in the portal. I think receiver obviously is a position to address. We've got, you know, you've got Thornton now out of the portal, you know, in the portal. You've got Coda running out of eligibility. Those were your top two Z receivers last year. You need to find somebody to start there. There's some younger guys that are intriguing, but nobody that's proven. I think the offensive line, more particularly right tackle, they need to find somebody. I think you look at the way things are shaping up right now, and Oregon loses a ton of starters, but I think Josh Connerly seems very likely as your left tackle next year. And I think you've got several interior guys returning and Jackson Powers Johnson, Marcus Harper, maybe Stephen Jones to fill that there. So I think finding a right tackle is a spot to look at. And then almost every position group on defense, you need help. I mean, I think defensive line is one where I go, okay, you know, they could have a bunch of guys back, but they could also lose all three of their starters. Like Jordan Riley is gone. I think Dorlus has an NFL decision to make. Casey Rogers, probably not an NFL decision, but it would be his sixth year since finishing high school in New York. He did a prep year and then 5 years of college. So how much longer does he actually want to stay in college? That could be a position to address, especially with Popo going for another year. We don't know if he'll get that. The edge position to me is a huge one. Oregon, you know, this is a, I don't know how much we're going to get into this, but for another podcast, probably Oregon had 3 sacks over their last 6 regular season games. And they finished with 16. That's dreadful. And DJ Johnson, who had 6 of your 16 sacks, is now done at Oregon. So you're losing like almost half your production and you weren't good at getting to the quarterback to begin with. Like they need to find somebody in the portal who can have an immediate impact at off the edge. In my opinion, that's like position almost number one of need. It was already a weakness this year. They need to go find somebody better and they need to probably find a couple of guys because Swinson's now out the door. I think there's several of the younger guys who were probably headed there. Inside linebacker to me, everybody could come back and they still need to address it. Jeffrey Bassa, I did a story on kind of the positions and kind of how I ranked them over the course of the season. And Bassa was the 24th best inside linebacker starter in the Pac-12 out of 25. Basically, they're saying he's the worst starting inside linebacker in the conference.
Good. Not That's good. Very good.
So finding somebody there might be nice. We also, of course, have Noah Sewell maybe looking to go pro. Is Justin Flo content spending more time in Eugene, not playing and not producing? I don't know. Could go through all these positions. Corner and safety, clear needs. Christian Gonzalez, probably going pro. He's your only really capable.
Should be going pro.
Should be going pro. Use your clear-cut best defensive back. You need to go find another player who can come in and be a plug-and-play guy. You might need to get 2 corners that can plug and play, depending on how you feel about Triquez and how Triquez feels about playing corner long-term, because I think his best position is probably nickel or safety. And then you got safety, where everybody could be back, but kind of like linebacker, they weren't very good last year.
Everybody could be gone, too.
They could all be gone, but they're also, like, I'm just like, even if everybody did come back, I think you would want to go get some players, because they weren't great last year. And then the last one that I wrote about, and maybe the other most important is punter, which feels crazy, but I mean, good Lord, they had 4 different guys trotted out there to try to be the punter this year, and none of them ended up being very good. And obviously where it landed was terrible, because I don't want to kick Alex Bales too much because he's taken a lot of crap this week, and honestly, probably rightfully so to a certain extent, but he's clearly not the answer. I don't think you've got Ross James or Andrew Boyle as the answer, so you have to go find someone in the punting game. So there's kind of a run through of some positions. Basically, as you could tell, there's like 4 minutes and I just said everybody basically that they need to hit in the portal. But I think it's kind of true of like they need help across this roster. And I think, you know, you might even add other groups depending upon what's outgoing at other positions. Again, we don't have a full list here. We don't want to hypothesize who might be leaving, but a player could leave here at a position group that I feel is pretty set right now, and suddenly you'd be also on the market again. So I expect Oregon to be really active. And as you could tell by going through basically all the positions, like, I think they have a lot to address.
They sure do. And there will be as many fish in the sea as possible this transfer portal season. Last year, the transfer portal saw over 4,000 Division I football players enter the transfer portal between FCS and FBS. The year before, it was 2,800. It's going to be a lot of kids who enter the transfer portal. And this is the time for Oregon to address all of those needs that Eric just mentioned and build their team the way they want it to be built. You know, we talked about this on one of the mailbags, I don't remember which one, about whether the defensive problems were scheme or personnel or whatever. I think it was largely due a little bit of both, but a lot of it was players. These are just not Dan and Tasha's players. They are trying to implement their system with a team that doesn't really fit it. It's a different type of team on paper than what it needs to be for the coaching staff. Here is your time. You know, everybody was calling for Tosh Lupoi's head after that Oregon State game and after a couple games this season. This is the time for Oregon to address those issues. This is their time to get the guys that they want to get and the guys that they think that could help the program. I think specifically in terms of positional values for what Oregon needs to get in the portal, I'm tempted to put punter number one, but I can't do that. Edge rushing absolutely needs to be number one. The thing is, when you don't have a great secondary, but your pass rush gets to the quarterback, it kind of eliminates some of the pressing issues in your secondary because the quarterback just doesn't have enough time to throw the ball. When you don't have either, that's your problem. When the quarterback has all day to throw the ball, and unfortunately for Oregon, this was like the first year in the last couple of years where the Pac-12 actually had some decent quarterbacks. And thank God they didn't play USC because that would have been a nightmare as well. They need to address the pass rushing situation. I've talked about this with James Krepel, the Oregonian. I think all of you guys have talked to him about this as well. He's mentioned that Oregon absolutely needs to get like the top two or three defensive end prospects in the transfer portal or whatever the case may be. And I absolutely agree. This needs to be the priority number one is getting these edge guys in. Tosh Lupoi needs to sell the fact that he's been an NFL defensive line coach. You know, he's been well known for teaching defensive line moves. He needs to have someone like DJ Johnson who had a career season with him, or Brandon Dorlis who had another great year with him. You know, have those guys preach to potential players like, hey, this guy is really good at his job. They need help on the defensive line. You would be a great impact player. That needs to be priority number one, in my opinion. I think second is probably punter, cornerback, inside linebacker as well, depending on what Justin Flo and Noah Sewell do, because they both have the option of going pro. I don't think it'd be a good idea for either of them to do so, and definitely a better idea for Sewell than it is Flo, but you know, we'll get across that bridge when we get there.
Flo's played like 180 career snaps in college. Like
he's got the decision. There's been sillier decisions before, but he's there. But they need to go after and get some help because while I love Jeffrey Bosa, I just don't think that he's a true inside linebacker. I don't think he can fit there. I just think he's too small. And that when you get into physical matchups like against Utah or against Washington at points, especially against Oregon State, they just move them around out of the box. Cornerback, safety, all of those things. Lastly, just the offensive line. I think you just need depth. They have on paper, you have a lot of guys who could potentially be a starter next season. You still have recruiting that could help out. But I think depth, like Eric mentioned, a right tackle, someone behind a potentially Dawson Daramillo, who could be a starting right tackle, could not be. Just depth is always great at the offensive line. You've seen that the last couple of seasons. When a guy has gone down in the last like 2 years, there really hasn't been a second thought about, ooh, well, Oregon's offensive line is going to be terrible because this guy went down. It's like, no, it's just like a Lego set. You plug and play. Clearly there are better players than others, but the ability that Oregon has had in the last 2 years to take a talented offensive lineman who gets hurt and replace him with another talented offensive lineman really helps. So I'd like to see those positions addressed. And again, like I started this all off with, there's going to be well over 4,000 or 5,000 players in the transfer portal this time around. There's going to be options, and I think Oregon needs to hit on the top of the list, guys.
Defense is the focus for me. It has to get replaced, but I also don't want to minimize that. I think Oregon needs to hit the portal for offensive players at a couple key spots. It would be really important to find a tackle. I think even though you've got Josh Connerly on the team, even though Dawson Jaramillo has got some experience, Stephen Jones may come back and has some experience there as well. I think you need to add a proven tackle. And the second one, with Dante Thornton's transfer, I kind of wonder if you got to go twice now, double dip at receiver for transfer, because beyond Chris Hudson and Troy Franklin, and look, I don't think they're going to leave, but this is the transfer portal. Crazy things happen. Would not surprise me if Chris Hudson goes, I want to be the guy, and leaves. Not saying that's going to happen saying I'm hearing that's happening, but that's just kind of the world we live in now. So I think you look at the production that they have beyond those two on the team, it's very little. Josh Delgado, Isaiah Brevard, Caleb Chapman, you've got Kyle Casper. Those guys all played in games, but Chapman had like one catch for 9 yards. I don't think Delgado had a catch. Brevard didn't have a catch. I think Kyle Casper had.
A lot of these guys are probably going to transfer out anyway. Like, I would expect Brevard. Does Chapman really want to hang around? What does Delgado do? So, like, yeah, no, there's need.
Like, so I think you got to go and hit the portal twice for receivers. But probably defensively is where the big focus needs to be. And there could be some guys within the league itself, you know, the Pac-12, that Oregon could go and add that helps here. And then across the country as well. But I'll pose this question. Even if Dante Moore sticks to Oregon like we expect, and let's now throw in the scenario that's a possibility, Bo Nix comes back. That probably opens the door for Ty to leave. I think Oregon needs to hit a portal transfer, like a grad transfer type guy, or maybe you find a high school guy that's a developmental player, because you can't go into 2023 with two scholarship quarterbacks.
Oh, 100%. You have to add. Yeah, that was on my list as well. Like, you have to find a quarterback. If one of the three that right now are expected to be on the team next year, that's Nix, Thompson, and Moore. If one of those three aren't, you have to go find somebody. And I would be most comfortable with a portal choice, probably, just to get some experience there. You know, depending upon who it is that comes back, they probably have a different opinion. Like, if Bo's the one who leaves, I think it's even more important to get some experience on the roster, so you're not turning it over to a Ty Thompson, Dante Moore, and another freshman situation, because that would be very, very – it would put you in a tough spot if one of the young guys isn't ready. But then, of course, if it's Thompson who takes off, I still think it would be worthwhile to go get some experience for the roster, even if Dante Moore is the perceived number two. And that's where it maybe gets difficult. Like, in a best-case scenario where it's Bo and it's Dante – who are on the roster, and you're looking for somebody, a third person, could be a tough sell for a person to come, you know, from wherever they've been, to come to Oregon and be perceived as the third player start right off the bat. People don't leave situations to go to other, you know, not great situations from a playing time perspective. So that's where maybe that gets difficult. But I'm with you, Matt. I think go find a quarterback.
If there's, 100%, you got to have three scholarship quarterbacks. Like Eric just mentioned, it's going to be a hard sell potentially if it's Nix and then Dante Moore, just to be like, hey, come on in, just be the third string quarterback immediately. That's a hard sell on somebody who's going into the transfer portal for all of the reasons that we discussed at the top of the show, where it's like, these are opportunities. These are situations where a player can go and find a school that maybe they can thrive at. Being a third string quarterback at Oregon behind a healthy Bo Nix, behind five-star freshman Dante Moore, isn't necessarily the spot where someone is going to potentially thrive in. But you can find a guy who will come 100%. Absolutely. I mean, these are, they're, again, like I said, there's going to be 17 million players in the transfer portal. There's going to be one guy who's just a game managing quarterback from pick any Big Ten school besides Ohio State.
Purdue.
Just a backup. Good. The Purdue's backup quarterback coming to Oregon if he enters the transfer portal.
I'll find out who it is.
But that's the point, is you need someone with experience. You need someone with game managing situations. In a hypothetical world, let's say this comes to existence and Nix goes down with injury, Dante Moore isn't ready. You just throw the guy in there, he makes a couple passes, you rely on the run game. You just need someone with experience. And I could see them getting another freshman quarterback just as a developmental guy, kind of like how I'm throwing it back way back here, but when Tua committed to Alabama, but they also brought in Mac Jones along the way when they had another experienced quarterback. I think it was Jalen Hurts at the time. It's not a bad idea. It'd be pretty smart if they did that. But if you need a quarterback, it's got to be someone with a little bit of experience in the portal.
Very similar to Millen a couple years back. It wasn't a double year for quarterback commits that year, but I think Herbert was on the roster. Tyler Shuck was on the roster. Like, they had a clear-cut starter, superstar starter. We had what everyone kind of assumed on the roster already was his heir replacement in Shuck, and they needed to find a guy that was a developmental guy in a couple of years. And maybe you hit on it and it turns out to be a great get, or in 2 or 3 years, it's clear he's not at this level and he sees it himself and transfers to a lower level and plays somewhere else. That's kind of what they're going to need to do. I think you could find that player in the portal too. Like, maybe you find a freshman or a sophomore. I think Tulsa had a couple quarterbacks play this season. Kansas had a couple quarterbacks play this season that were younger guys that had to play because of injury. And they were promising. They weren't maybe necessarily great, but they were promising. You could go in and say, hey, you're going to come here. 2023 is a developmental year for you. 2024, when Bo Nix is gone, it's you versus Dante Moore. You can sell that to a decent quarterback. And that, you know, athletes are confident and they'll bet on themselves and think that they could beat out a freshman.
So, Matt, are we operating under the Bo Nix is returning perspective? We've been doing a lot of talk about that.
I think it's real.
You think there's a realistic chance?
Let's go back to the one that we do know, Jay leaves.
Yeah.
We all privately on our chat were like, wow, that's interesting. We would have figured Ty would have been the first one to leave, because Jay felt like, from what we'd heard, from what we've seen, from what we were just kind of assuming, Jay would be the one kind of content saying, hey, I'll be what I just described. I'll be the guy that develops in 2023 and then competes against Dante Moore in 2024 for the starting job. We kind of felt like Ty would go first and maybe Jay would leave regardless, but it would always would have been Ty saying he's leaving. So just me reading the tea leaves, speculating here, maybe it's Bo has said he wants to come back and that has quickly told Ty that I need to leave because if I want to play, I need to go now. I can't wait another year. Where now Jay's sitting here thinking, well, maybe I can stay because I got to beat out a true freshman. I've had a year in the system. I know what's expected, yada, yada, yada. I could be the number two and then battle Dante Moore out for 2024. I think it's a real possibility.
It would be a huge win.
It's the biggest win of the portal season for off season for Oregon. Yeah.
Well, and that brings me to we should get to other positions that we need, that, you know, some players that I know you've got a list, but like, I know it's not a portal win because I don't think Bo Nix is looking to enter the portal, but a big part of coaching now from a Dan Lanning perspective and all coaches is not just acquisition, but retention of talent. And you look around the roster, you look at what's happening elsewhere, you look at the conference, you look at the national landscape. Oregon has a capable quarterback and can shore up some of the rest of the issues. They could be kind of right back where they were this last year, where they're genuinely competing for something special. If Nix goes, unless they find another Bo Nix in the portal, you get a little bit nervous about what 2023 might look like. So Bo Nix coming back would be huge for I mean, I don't think that's obvious. That's like doesn't even need to be said again, but like the potential shift in what the quarterback position could look like in 23 from Nix returning to him leaving and whatever you replace him with, to me, could get a little bit concerning because you just don't know. I mean, it's just funny looking at the history of Oregon quarterbacks since Marcus has left of how many guys in between people thought were going to be really good that weren't. Obviously, the best case being the years after Justin Herbert where Chuck didn't end up working out and Anthony Brown didn't end up working out. And now you've got the guy who did hit in Bo Nix. And if you could keep him around for a couple of years, I think that would be significant in terms of just keeping the program at where they're at. Because I do think you get concerned about what the year would look like in 23 if he doesn't.
100%, yeah. I think if Nix were to go, I think it probably would be announced soon enough. But again, from December 5th, there's going to be quite a few names out there. Oregon last year, you know, Nix came later in the transfer portal cycle. I know there was no clear, like, hey, there's this period and then the next period, but came later in the transfer portal cycle, but pretty soon after an offensive coordinator hire. There's going to be names. And, you know, again, if Nix were to come back, it'd be monumental for the program. It would just solidify the quarterback position for more than a year in a row. 2 years of Nix would be good. It'd be a nice learning experience for Dante Moore and whatever other quarterback they decide to bring in. I think that's all I got about it. I think it'd be great, obviously.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll break down some of these offers that have come out and some other names maybe to watch.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Matt Bray, American School, Jared Mack. Breaking down the portal talk, and we've got a couple scholarship offers that have come out at the FCS level to portal players. I spoke with Dre McCray, a wide receiver out of Austin Peay State University. He is a Tennessee, Florida native. He is a sophomore, and he is a damn good wide receiver. You look at his stats, you look at his speed. Was a Hero Sports Freshman All-American, first-team All-OVC player in 2021, was again an All-OVC player in 2022. This past season, 76 catches for 1,021 yards and 9 touchdowns. Big play threat. He had longs of 62, 72, 44. Dre McCray, it's obvious that Oregon has – interest because they've offered, but I think this is the big play home run threat that you're looking at adding, that you want to add, that goes with what we saw Oregon try to do a lot of games this past season by going over the top. We saw it with Chase Cota against Oregon State. We saw it with Dante Thornton against Utah. We saw Troy Franklin against Washington. Franklin multiple times going over the top. This is another guy that can bring you that deep speed, big hitter type guy. And McCray has a relationship with Carlos Lachlan. Knew him from his time at Memphis, knew him from his time at Florida State. and Oregon is going to try and get him for an official visit. He said he hasn't made decisions yet of what schools he's going to visit. That will come probably after this weekend when he gets a better idea of who's in the mix. And then Oregon also offered an offensive tackle. I think it's both interesting. We both spent a long time, all of us spent a long time talking about the importance of defense for Oregon in the portal. And then they went out and they offered two offensive players, the second being Ajani Cornelius from Rhode Island, offensive tackle. Again, an area where you could have a pretty big open spot for playing time.
Yeah, he's a starting right tackle too, which why to me would and he's again I think it was Brian Doan from our website that posted something about a conversation with Cornelius of about he's got like 20 offers in like 4 days or something like that. He's like one of the biggest names from an FCS level that is making the move, and Oregon will have competition. But he would be a both these players make a lot of sense to me. Cornelius in particular of Oregon is obviously still in with Caden Proctor, number one offensive line recruit from the state of and from the state of Iowa, that he's an Iowa commit. They visited him for the Washington game. If he comes in, maybe year one, he's available and ready to start. If they don't get him, and even if they do, it's not a bad idea to have a ready-made right tackle. And that's what Cornelius would be. He again, he's the kind of that definition of a plug-and-play guy. Obviously, going up a level of competition from Rhode Island, which is FCS, to Oregon, but was one of the best offensive linemen in the country at the FCS level the last 2 years, has experience at right tackle. Makes a lot of sense. And if you could construct an offensive line, again, to me, like that's the one hole right now. I think you feel good about Connerly at left tackle. You need to see it. We didn't really see him play a ton of actual left tackle. He basically played primarily on that, you know, jumbo package as almost an extension of like a, as a tight end, basically. And then you've got your interior guys who have more experience this year. Harper's got a full year of starting experience, basically. Jackson Powers Johnson's played a ton of snaps. Same thing with Stephen Jones, who's potentially coming back as well. Dawson Jaramillo, there's guys there, but getting a actual right tackle. Like, how many times do we talk about the fact they just didn't have tackle bodies on the roster? They just don't have a lot of them. And this is what Cornelius is. So I think that would be a great addition. And then McCray is interesting from a size perspective. He's like 5'9". He's got like a Tyreek Hill body type, 5'9", 177, pretty compactly built. Also wears the number 10 at Austin Peay. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a homage. I don't know, similar players. That would be a really interesting fit, especially if they use him as an outside receiver, because from a size perspective, he's not a big person. But if he's got the speed on the outside to win one-on-one battles, could be a fit. To me, it's just kind of it's interesting because if that's the – and I know you don't recruit this way necessarily, maybe at certain positions, but if this is the Dante Thornton replacement, it's kind of an interesting one from just a skill set perspective, being so different body type-wise. But seems like a quality player and somebody who's had a lot of success at a lesser level.
Cornelius is very intriguing, one, because he's a Rhode Island player. Two is because he's a really good Rhode Island player. Like Eric mentioned, he's been offered over 20 times in, like the last couple of days ever since he entered the transfer portal, and he's good. You know, I watched a good little bit of film on him. He's another guy who could be a plug and play tackle, just like Eric mentioned, which Oregon I would say needs. They also have George Silva, who's rated as the number one offensive tackle in the junior college by 24/7. We know how junior college has been to Oregon the last couple of years in terms of bringing them offensive tackles and TJ Bass and Sala. That's just it's a good option to have when you're Oregon. It kind of gets back to my point earlier about just having depth at the offensive line. You know, maybe if they land both of these guys, Cornelius works and Silva is the backup, that's a good one too. Or either way, if it works like that. Just having depth at the offensive line is such a luxury. And I think it's something that they, with Adrian Clem, are going to want to continue to do. And for McCray, really intriguing prospect. And just like Eric, I had the same idea of like, well, if they're bringing him in to be the Dante replacement, it's an interesting person to bring him in because he's not like Dante Thornton at all. He seems more like a souped up Chris Hudson, a more souped up Jalen Redd, someone who's really quick and explosive. It can break off a long play, similar to that, like Eric mentioned, of a Tyreek Hill, maybe a Jalen Waddle type of player. Just a smaller, compact frame, has just absurd receiving numbers this past year for Austin Peay. I think it could be a really good addition. And to Matt's original point of how we spent a lot of time on defense and then all of a sudden they offer two offensive guys out of the portal. Well, it is the FCS level guys who are entering the portal. I think offense can translate a little easier to the FBS level of competition than defensive guys. Not to say that there aren't any good potential defensive players coming in from the FCS level. I just think that offensive players are going to translate better. And by the time all the FBS guys jump into the portal, I think you're going to see a lot more defensive offers going out.
There's a lot of names now that you could tie back to Oregon that Oregon should have interest in. And I'll just bring up four names that I think make sense Oregon to go after that are just within the own conference of Pac-12 players. First is Isaiah Lewis, a safety from Colorado. And people are going to look, Colorado's terrible. Well, look, every team has competent players, has impact players that can help programs. We saw that last year with Christian Gonzalez, translated right over from Colorado to potentially a top 10 pick.
And Oregon's best defensive player was a Colorado transfer last year. So if there's a trend, maybe follow that.
Yes. He's played in 43 games, started 19, was a key guy this season. Another guy on a team that wasn't really good this season is Ben Coleman, an offensive lineman from California. He actually had an offer from Oregon coming out of high school, different coaching staff, obviously, but really had serious interest in Oregon. And then Oregon kind of went a different direction here. But 20 starts at left guard and 9 at left tackle in his experience for Cal. This is an experienced guy that you can add to the mix. Maybe not a superstar player, but a Pac-12 starter on a team that matters. And then the big news is this week was David Shaw after they lost to BYU. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, peace. I'm retiring. Like what? That has opened the floodgates for Stanford. And I understand they have not been good the last couple of seasons. I think COVID's kind of impacted some of that, but they have some dudes. And both of them are on the defensive side of the football. Stephen Heron is an edge defender for them. He had 5.5 sacks this season. A starter for Stanford the last couple of years. And then Lavani Dumani, an inside linebacker, maybe their best player, team captain, lot impact trophy guy, has started the last couple of years for them. Jared brought it up. They've got Oregon's got issues at linebacker. Doesn't think Jeffrey Bosa is big enough at the inside. Dumani is. He's very good. And those are just four of a long list of names I've got. We can go beyond if you've got other names. I know Jared mentioned a couple. But those are just four guys that fill position needs, fill defensive needs that are within your own conference. If you can find them that quickly. And by the way, Oregon's got, Oregon has various interest levels of all four of these guys. Like, I know that right now. Are they their top guys? I don't know. But there's going to be interest from Oregon here in all four of them.
And there was a history last year of going at, intra-conference recruiting. You think about, I mentioned earlier, Gonzalez, Pac-12 guy. Chase Kota, your second best receiver this year, former Pac-12 guy. Taki Taimani ended up getting, I wouldn't say lost in the shuffle, but did end up winning a starting job. It's another Pac-12 guy. So that was... I think that's all. I think that's just the list. But there's three guys last year that there's a history of going within the conference, and it makes sense because, A, you are seeing these players on film throughout the year, and you're familiarizing yourself with who looks good. And I think for all four of the players you mentioned, Matt, those were guys, at least three of them, that were on my players to know list that I did each week of kind of like the best players in the opposing rosters. And hitting this, like those two players you mentioned for Stanford make a lot of sense. One of the things I think we kind of at the end of the season were kind of grappling with was what was wrong with Oregon's linebackers. Dumani is a good fit in from a certain perspective, but I don't know if he's got the speed. I'm not trying to just cut it down entirely, because I think he could be a good fit next to Sewell, but if assuming Sewell comes back, which again is not a guarantee, but I almost would just rather go get somebody. And this is where it's really hard, because it's like, I'm like, let's go find a 230-pound inside linebacker who also runs like 4.5. Like, those guys just aren't around very much, which is what made Georgia so good defensively, is they were able to like have like 10 of them somehow on their roster at all times. And like, you just don't see those players everywhere. And I think that's part of the issue with the defense that Dan constructed at Georgia, was the talent there allowed you to make up for some of the deficiencies of what a scheme might look like. And if you don't have the same type of athletes. So to me, you have to be really selective with some of these defensive players. Heron off the edge could be, I think, a really nice addition, if I'm being honest. Like, I think that could fit really well. I'd love to get more experience and frankly, more athleticism at safety as well. So Lewis could be a nice fit. I think those are good names, Matt. And I'm sure there are going to be other names that pop up. Like, that's the thing that's interesting, is there's kind of preliminary names, and then there's going to be names that come out on Monday, and then there's going to be names that pop up in January. That's why keeping the window open for 45 days is so interesting. And so, like, this is very similar to free agency in terms of how you track it. The only difference being that the actual list can kind of grow organically differently than you see in professional sports, where it's all contract based and the teams and the individuals kind of have an idea of who they're signing, not re-signing, how the contracts expire, all that stuff leading up to the start of the free agency period. Well, the transfer portal period, like, you could see, you know, very few players transfer from a school in the first week. And then suddenly, for whatever reason, 9 guys leave, you know, all in kind of a single, I don't know, like abruptly later on. So the lists that we're going to be coming out with, even on Monday's show, of like, who's interesting, who did Oregon lose, we'll be doing kind of a fun recap. I think that's going to be a really fun show, kind of on the fly of, okay, who do we like, who's out there, who were disappointed Oregon lost, does it make sense? Even that show will be lacking some of the clarity that we're going to have probably by Christmas, of like, who even the biggest of targets might be, because there might be other players that jump, you know, jump ship right around bowl season, and then even probably into the new year. Honestly, you're probably not going to have a real concrete idea on who all is going to be of interest until like the last week of Jan, you know, the last week of this whole thing, when there's now a little bit of space between the end of the games being played and whatnot.
And that's the tough role for the coaching staff, is, do I take the guy who I think could be really good, who has potential, who is a high star recruit, who enters the transfer portal on day one or day two? Or do I, you know, roll the dice and wait, and then on day 14 of the transfer portal opening, a legitimate bona fide starter from some big time program jumps into the transfer portal, and then all of a sudden I don't have to worry about if this guy is going to potentially get to that level. I can get a guy at that level. And that's what makes the transfer portal difficult. It's just for what the reasons that Eric said, is like, these guys, it's similar to free agency. They can, you know, they can leave their respective teams, but you know, there's no concrete date that they can do it. This could all be decided on a whim, and it could just happen. And I'm not saying that all players do that, because there's again, these are opportunities for players to go out and get the school that they want to go to. But sometimes it can just happen for whatever reason. Maybe there's a cornerback coach that leaves, and a bunch of cornerbacks from one team want to leave, or the defensive coordinator gets into legal trouble and then is fired from the team, and then all the defense. There's a whole bunch of different reasons why somebody could leave a team. And that's the struggle with this as a coach, is, do you, you know, push your chips in now and try to make the most contact with the guys at the front of the portal, or do you wait and then potentially see those guys leave and then get stuck with nothing or something? I think it's going to be really difficult. I don't really have any more names to add to this, just because still just time to wait. I mean, there's a bunch of quarterbacks who have entered the transfer portal already. Like, you know, Cade McNamara from Michigan committed to Iowa already. Phil Jakovic from Boston College, who was good last year, was pretty terrible this year, entered the transfer portal with a year left. There was another guy who was Notre Dame starting quarterback, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, just entered the transfer portal a couple minutes ago.
I was just going to bring him up, Drew Pine. 8-2 as a starter, number 21 ranked team in the country, Notre Dame, like 2,500 yards passing, went for 303 incompletions against USC in the final regular season game. Portal.
Right.
He was supposed to be the starter at Notre Dame next season.
Right. And he's shown his stuff. He's going to try to go get to a bigger school than Notre Dame, which seems hard to do. But that's the thing. It's like you could have pushed your chips in for, I don't know, maybe you're a team and you're really looking at Jay Butterfield. And it's like, wow, this guy could have a lot of potential. And then, you know, just a day later, 2 days later, it's just Drew Pine goes out there and is actually a bona fide starter in college football. Is just there for the taking. So it's going to be a whirlwind. I'm very excited for the transfer portal season just to see
how we're going
to
do
that. That Monday show should be a lot of fun.
We're going to do a hot stove
show. I'm excited.
I knew what the term was. We introduced the term to Eric. He was unaware of the term, but Jared's the baseball guy, so he was like all in on the hot stove. He's the one that knows the most about it. But I think Monday could be fascinating. And honestly, guys, like I'm not advocating for us to do this, but we could maybe pull it off. Some kind of portal podcast every day for the next kind of like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, because I mean, as we've just mentioned, I mean, Jared mentioned it, a couple guys going into the portal as we've recorded, the Pine one is crazy. It's going to change the sport for better or worse. And high school recruiting will still always be important. And will be a necessity that you have to do. But you can quickly turn a 6-6 year around into a Pac-12 championship caliber year, as we saw with USC, who actually went 4-8 last season. And they quickly went portal really hard. They added some key high school guys, and they're playing for the Pac-12 championship Friday night. You can see Oregon go portaling and add a quarterback, as a receiver, add a couple guys on defense, and all of a sudden be in a position last week of the season to get to the Pac-12 championship game. And so this is going to be, I think, a sport-changing moment where the portal opens up and it really impacts how programs operate. You can quickly turn around your roster. It was always said like basketball was the easier sport to just show up and get really good really fast because it's fewer players. Football, I still think it's going to be hard year over year to make over, you know, changes. But you can go from a team that's competing for a Pac-12 championship to a playoff caliber competition with the right portal additions, which just makes this fascinating.
And we're going to get to a point here where major teams are adding like 3 to 5 prep recruits and like 20 to 25 portal recruits, where portal ends up being like Chip Kelly probably is thrilled with the idea of just like, I don't have to do any prep recruiting. I'm just recruiting portal. And that's already kind of the direction. I know when Dave Woods came on our show, the UCLA reporter, he said that's kind of already what wasn't that drastic, but that they are basically portal over prep recruits. And I think that could be, I don't know if that's going to be the norm everywhere because you're still going to have a ton of these top 5-star kids. But with the way this plays out, like the portal thing is almost more of a – there's a little bit more certainty with the portal because you've got experience, but also because of the one, you know, the one-time transfer rule. Once that player is there, they can still leave, but they have to have special circumstances. But they've already used their one-time transfer. It makes them more likely to stick around. So it's almost more attractive. This is not to go down too much of a tangent. There's just a lot of portal thoughts I've had. Like a guy like a Dante Thornton or a Byron Cardwell would be attractive to another school because he probably won't transfer again. And if he does, he has to go down a level or you get a waiver. But he also still has, you know, 3 years of eligibility remaining, which makes him someone who can be a long-term player you develop. So there's just it's going to be a process for us to kind of get used to just as the listeners of kind of how this all operates, but there's going to be, the hierarchy will be interesting to follow of what's the most attractive, acquisition option. Is it going and getting the 5-star recruit, or is it better to go get a guy who plays 1 year at an FCS school, can come in right away, has a great year at an FCS school, and now you've got him and he can't transfer again, basically, unless he gets a waiver. So no, there's just it's going to be really interesting to follow. And I'm not sure I'm up for a podcast today as Matt is suggesting.
I was not advocating. I was just saying.
We could.
We could pull it possibility. Off if we really wanted to. It's going to be that crazy.
It will be that crazy. I sign you two up if you guys want to do a every evening at 5 p.m. and just give away your evenings for the rest of the month of December. Go for it. I'll figure out something else to do.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you'll figure out something else to do. We could do I was thinking for Monday, like a live stream, a hot stove live stream.
I think we should do a live stream. I think
StreamYard is a good live stream platform. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun. I think we've gone over a whole bunch of things already. I think this is a good primer for Oregon fans or people who just don't know a lot about the portal and just what's going to happen. I'm interested to see Dan's philosophy now that he has a real full off season to go into the portal. He kind of did last year, but it's a little more nuanced, and now he knows the team and the program. So I'm interested to see what Dan Lanning does and his offensive coordinator hire, which eventually will happen. I'm sure of it. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited.
It's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for listening to this pre-portal show. We'll be back on Monday with a recap of the craziness that will ensue with the portal opening. Until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.